25 seconds. T-minus 15 seconds. T-minus 10 seconds.
Flight check complete. Satellite uplink verified.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Black Op Radio, the voice of political conspiracy research. You're listening to Black Op Radio, the show NSA doesn't want you to hear. Now here is your host, Leto Sanic.
Control room, you're on here.
Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Black Op Radio. This is your host, Leto Sanic, and we are speaking to author, a lawyer, Mark Adamczyk. Welcome.
Hello, Len. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for taking time to talk to us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Okay. Oh, great. So you have an article up Sunday, December 22nd. So just a couple of days ago, the protected JFK files, and it's up at Kennedy's and King. And you work with Jim DiEugenio and at Kennedy's and King, a contributor. So I wanted to help promote that by having you discuss the article, and then, you know, people can read it in depth for further. But sometimes people don't read everything. People tell me they go on walks or, you know, hiking or in car, you know, traveling, and they just listen to the show and they listen to the author talk about the article rather than reading the whole thing. So try to give them best. Okay, so what got you interested in this, the JFK files?
Well, it's been a number of years that I've been looking at the records issue going back to, 2017 and 2018, when the topic was so major in the media with the release of the files that Trump was in charge of back then when he was president the first time. And I wanted to educate myself in the Records Act, the statute that was passed in 1992 by Congress immediately after the JFK film by Oliver Stone was released, and there was immense pressure to do something about the issue of transparency and secrecy. At that point, it was 30 years after the assassination. So I just wanted to see what that law said, and I've probably read it over 100 times now. And, you know, sometimes you look at it each time, you get a little bit more of a takeaway, or, you know, no law is written perfect, but it's pretty darn good. And it created, of course, the Assassination Records Review Board, the ARRB, which did a phenomenal job. They had tremendous and unprecedented power and authority to look at records and make declassification decisions independently. And only because it's a game changer, because prior to that law, lawsuits were filed under FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act. The way that law is set up, and unfortunately, Jefferson Morley in his case against the CIA, we get into that if you want, you know, ran into the stone wall in that FOIA statute, which allows an agency head, so the head of the FBI or CIA or what have you, to sort of make a final decision based on national security, that term that we love, right? So the ARRB had a whole different arsenal of authority. It could declassify a record unless there was a specific reason, right, that an agency put forth to the board as to a living person, current source, or method that still required protection. So the ARRB went through every record that the agencies requested protection on and made decisions. As we know, the final date for any record that was protected then was 2017 in October. And then we saw what Trump did, and we can get into that. So that's really what's been going on the last, you know, 7 years or so. It's now a very hot issue. And that's what's been keeping me busy and my co-authors on the Chokeholds book. And that's where we're at.
Right. Well, you mentioned Jefferson Morley. For people who are not familiar with that, do you want to mention his effort to get records?
Yeah. I do, and he really can't get enough credit, because I've been watching and listening and reading more of his things lately, and the tremendous work he did in looking at the CIA connections to Oswald. And I think ultimately, and I know Jeff would agree, that that's the main reason for the continued secrecy, why the agencies, namely the CIA, are fighting so hard, because they knew all about Oswald prior to Dallas. They lied to the Warren Commission about it. They lied to the House Select Committee, to the ARB, and so forth. So now that that's more obvious and known with records that do exist, Jeff Morley has done a great job in explaining that and boiling down the nuances that he's looked into, such as New Orleans. And George Joannides is the CIA case officer that Mr. Morley has heavily focused on. That was the main basis of his lawsuit against the CIA, was to get the Joannides files to get more information out as to Oswald's assignments and activities in New Orleans, Mexico City, and then, of course, up to Dallas.
Yeah, it's just so interesting, the fact that, you know, there's documents that people want released and it should be for the public. The government's supposed to work for the public, and yet you can see them circling the wagons and just holding back on documents.
Yeah, it's two things, really. It's a, of course, there's like an institutional need or mandate, right, that the agencies have going back to when they were created after World War II, to gather intelligence and assist the president and the Pentagon with that information. But it's turned it into so much more. And there's like sort of this mandate or a God-given right to keep secrets, to keep their operations secrets. You can't know about this, national security. This is what we do. So that's part of it. The other part of it is the specific reasons, or the likely reasons, that there's still over 3,600 protected files that we know of in the archives that they're fighting tooth and nail to keep secret. They keep violating the law that we talked about. They keep pressuring the presidents to violate that law. So now we're hoping Trump, and he said he's going to do it, will take a change in course and just follow that statute as written. And we can get into that as well, on different things Trump and Congress can do about it.
Okay, well, let's do that, because we remember that Trump did say he was very interested in what the documents were going to hold. His friend, the judge, was asking him, are you going to release stuff? And they thought it was going to. And then the next day, he said, oh, we've got to hold back. The CIA's not ready. I mean, you know, it really just underscores that the government is hiding those people responsible. And it's up to your conclusion whether you think they are in collusion with that. That if enough people said, you guys want him gone, we want him gone too, what can we do to help?
Yeah. You know, it's not often talked about, but Andrew Eiler, one of our authors of Chokeholds, and myself, and Larry Schnapp as well, when he was looking at this and is, you know, working on the lawsuit with the Mary Farrell Foundation, we came across a memo that was drafted presumably for Trump in 2017 at the 11th hour. It's called the Gannon Memo. It's written by the Department of Justice attorney. And it essentially rewrote the JFK Act, that statute we talked about, illegally and without a court order or a congressional review. It gave Trump plausible grounds at the 11th hour to continue the delay. Essentially told him he doesn't have to make a record-specific identification of a handful of records that are still so secret, that have a name of a living person or a current source and method, or the various reasons for protection. They just gave him a legal document that said, you can just delay this. We're not ready. I know it's been 25 years that we had to get our act together, but there's still organization to do. So Trump, I know Jim DiGenio's talked a lot about this on your show. He issued a 6-month delay and then another 3-month delay. It was just delays. I mean, it still was against the language and intent of that statute. And then it got into the Biden administration, and Biden made it worse with his quote unquote transparency plans. And if you read those, one of his executive orders, the latest one, I believe, said, look, agency, the job's done here, folks. You know, we've complied with the law. There's nothing more to release of significance. If the agencies feel like, at their whim, releasing more when they're comfortable doing so, they'll go ahead and do it. I mean, that couldn't be more different than transparency. It made it worse than a Freedom of Information Act standard, really. So that's what's happened in recent years.
Yeah, right. So Jefferson Morley, even Judge Napolitano, showed interest in prodding Trump to do this. And now, maybe with some animosity to these outfits and with Bobby Kennedy kind of at his side there, they may release this stuff. I mean, here's hoping, right?
Yeah, I mean the environment is better than ever for it to happen with Bobby Kennedy not only being in the cabinet but publicly saying recently that he believes the CIA is responsible for his uncle's assassination. I happen to agree, and so he by all accounts Trump pledged to RFK that we'll do this if we work together. And yeah, that's where we're at. I mean, I recently RFK has gone to the extent of trying to have his daughter-in-law appointed as deputy director of the CIA. I mean, that might ruffle some feathers in Langley. But yeah, it's just it's a matter of just following that statute and looking at what's there and say, okay, is there more on Oswald than that you've covered up for 60 years that you didn't want to share, you felt was too sensitive. It shows that the Warren Commission and even the House Select Committee, their conclusions about Oswald were just false. He was not a lone gunman. He was not a communist. We all know that now. That's one of the points of my article is there's so much we already know about Oswald and his assignments and activities. So the logical question from there is like, what else is there? Is it that he really didn't do it? There was a whole fake legend of him being a communist created by the CIA for maybe other operations, infiltration of the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, for instance, in New Orleans. Is it just that, or is it more than that? Is it he? We know he didn't do it. He wasn't who he said he was, or who he said he was. But we really don't know who did it still. It really could have been Castro. It could have been the anti-Castro Cubans on their own. But I think you and I have talked about this on a prior show, Len. If there was evidence that Oswald really didn't do it, but it was Castro, LBJ would have had bombers over Havana probably that day after November 22nd, right? Because that was what the Joint Chiefs and the Pentagon and the anti-Castro Cubans out of Miami wanted so bad was to get rid of Castro. And I don't know if that really quite closes the loop on it. So the more sinister, and I think maybe closest to the truth, is not only was Oswald not who the Warren Commission said he was, he was an asset. He was used by the CIA in various operations prior to Dallas. And then, of course, was set up as a pro-Castro sympathizer in New Orleans by a CAA-sponsored operation. The Mexico City thing is a whole nother show to get into. If your listeners look at Dan Hardway's work and his statement, sworn statement given to Jeff Morley in that lawsuit is excellent. You can find it online, and it really details the struggles the House Select Committee had in investigating the Oswald CIA connections. And then
Well,
really,
then he's impersonated, right? So, I mean,
yeah,
who does that? Who sets
exactly.
up a trail, even to leave a false trail, you know?
Yeah, Matt Crumpton, our co-author on Chokeholds, has a whole chapter on the impersonations of Oswald. There's so many of them. It's remarkable. And like you said, that can only lead to intelligence connections. So we know all that now. So really the final question to answer is, was Oswald's assignments and activities that clearly set him up as a pro-Castro sympathizer to be in Dallas at the right place at the right time, does that connect to another operation to actually murder JFK? Because it all went down just like that, right?
Now, what was the motivating factor for you to decide to write this article for Kennedys and King? I mean, a lot of people are, researching, looking into it, but they don't actually, I was going to say pick up pen, but these days
Yeah.
it's just typing in the computer. But what was it, you just feel that not enough people know about this?
Yeah, I think it's because of the timing of what we talked about with Trump coming in, and we now know so much more about Oswald and his CIA connections. We've researched the heck out of that statute. We know how it works, how it's supposed to work. Andrew Eiler and Paul Blow are doing awesome work on that, and continuing to focus on that issue and the legal solutions. But really, it was for readers to start thinking about, well, what are the most logical reasons for the continued secrecy? And that I laid out, you know, the things that we know about Oswald now, his activities in New Orleans, and how that was connected to a CIA-sponsored operation. And then, you know, putting it together, we also now know about Operation Northwoods. That was discovered by the ARRB in the late 90s when it was in office. The Pentagon scheme to use a spectacular event, either domestic on U.S. soil, to immediately lay the blame at Castro and spark the invasion that they so badly wanted, that Kennedy refused to do at the Bay of Pigs after the missile crisis, and he flat out refused the Northwoods plan. Well, what I've come to look at and what I think makes the most sense is that type of a plan was used in Dallas, because what happened? That within hours of the assassination, the same group, the DRE, sponsored by the CIA and run by Joe Anides, the guy that I mentioned, the CIA case officer out of JM Wave in Miami, was running that group. That group is responsible, is the source for all of the worldwide news on November 22nd about the suspected assassin Oswald being the pro-Castro communist lone nut. And all the stuff he did in New Orleans, his radio and TV interviews, went worldwide. So that's what happened that day.
Now, when you mentioned imposters and that, like, I think of the John Armstrong thing, where it's even, if you subscribe to that, even deeper, where they get people from childhood to, they're, you know, got a program where they're thinking this guy's going to speak two languages and he'll be impersonated. And yet I've seen some of these shows now where they talk about prosthetic, you know, masks and stuff like that. And it's a kind of thing where they have been impersonating people for years, much longer than you ever dreamed of. And they've got some of these things down to a fine art. And, you know, Lee Oswald, he had maybe no idea what was going on. You think about the Richard K. Snagel, you think about all the other different plots, and especially in Chicago, where there are people that have very similar situations that you could say low nut. And, you know, even the assassination attempt on Trump, which you just don't hear anything about. Who was that guy? I mean, he was cremated pretty quick. His house had been cleaned, evidently, like professionally cleaned. Nobody's really got good records of what he was doing for the last 2 months. He ended up on a commercial for BlackRock before that. You go, well, they have really perfected things, and maybe they just don't want people to know that the same kind of thing is going on. And if Trump hadn't turned his head, you know, an inch, it'd be a whole different thing. And yeah, it would have been some kind of lone nut who was shot there on the roof, how he got up there with a ladder, how he got a gun in there, how he got a rangefinder. It's just like, you have to... Well, you know,
yeah,
you know, it's still going on to this day, is why they want to protect sources and methods, because they're still doing it.
Yeah, that case has a lot of earmarks of Oswald in Dallas, for sure. I mean, you know, I'm hoping another thing Trump can do is start a new presidential commission on assassinations. And as the JFK files are released, and there becomes a stronger need to reinvestigate that case and in his own assassination attempt, to really you know, get to the bottom of these things. I don't know if that'll happen, but I'd like to see it. You know, back to what you said about Oswald and his impersonations and his assignments and activities, I think it's really important to look at what he said when he was in police custody. He never said he didn't do anything. He didn't say he didn't know anything. He said, "I'm a patsy." So I think he quickly put together that, you know, the role that he was in, and you know, his actions on that day, and sort of, you know, leaving by public transportation, going to the theater. I know Jim's talked about this a lot, and I agree. I don't think Oswald was supposed to survive that day, either at the book depository or the Texas Theater, because once he was in custody and talking and saying those things and asking for legal representation, the whole thing went haywire. And of course, you know, what happened with Jack Ruby took place 2 days later. So when that part of the operation went haywire, and they quickly had to find a way to go with a lone nut and prevent an investigation into who Oswald really was and his intelligence connections. And but the plotters still eliminated Kennedy. I think that's, of course, what they wanted to do. They didn't get their invasion of Cuba, but they got Vietnam months later. So,
Well, even 2 days later,
yeah,
right?
exactly. Yeah.
That
Yeah. Well, it developed quickly. Yes.
and that lets you know it was even in the works. And NSAM 273, there's a draft of it, the day on from the 21st,
Yeah.
and the draft says, in legal terms, before it says we're going to help, and now it says we're going to help them to win. So, that whole thing and Bell helicopter and all the money from the Department of Defense that had already been planning on this war, and the CIA and the drug money in that area, the whole Golden Triangle, that whole, if you subscribe to all that, it's like, okay, we're back in business now.
Yeah, the spectacular events that are staged, of course, the Kennedy assassination being, and along with 9/11 being the most famous unfortunate cases, led to a patsy of sorts and immediate war. And if you kind of look at it with a big picture, you can kind of see that, and it makes it much easier when you're looking at the news and the mainstream media to really question everything you see and hear,
Right, and I can't help but think that they would have done, studies on this privately, and they say if we reveal what we did in the Kennedy assassination and RFK and even Martin Luther King, then people will say, well, 9/11, how did that really happen? Something hit the Pentagon, and then well, wait a minute, who blew up the Nord Stream pipeline? Who blew, yeah. Of course, these guys are out of control.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't done a deep dive into 9/11, and I've looked at, there's a pretty good documentary. It's on YouTube. It's like $5 to rent, called Loose Change. That has a lot of information on the crazy amount of things that were going on in Washington and the Pentagon that day, that just don't, there's no benign explanation for it, right? So it's just, yeah, I mean, it's
Well, all you have to do, I would say at arm's length, if you watch Building 7 fall,
Yeah.
like any controlled demolition you ever seen, and it wasn't hit by anything, then you go, well, they pre-wired these buildings and they had to kind of create something to say, oh, yeah, at 5 o'clock that building fell,
Yeah.
And then you go, well, it looks like Building 1 and 2, and they fell straight. I mean, you can watch some other buildings and they're always crumbling, you tip over sideways and that. These imploded on their footprint, but a different topic. But I'm just saying, at arm's length, if you watch Building 7 and you don't have any questions, then you won't have any. But
Yeah,
we'll see what they say. Yeah.
that really raised my eyebrows. The other one that I saw recently, there's still no reliable video footage, which is hard to believe, of the plane actually hitting the Pentagon.
No,
And then,
exactly. Yeah, that three
you know what I
frames,
mean?
and evidently they went to other gas stations and that where there were security cameras on, and they confiscated all those. I've seen a couple of interviews with the people who did that. They said, well, they took our tape, so they don't want you to see exactly what hit it, right? And then, but look, when I see that, even like the little video of something hitting the Pentagon, right? It reminds me of Commission Exhibit 399. You go, well, no, that didn't do it. And there's just so many things, but Building 7's like that. But back to you writing on these files, which should have been released a while ago, and they keep holding on to them. And then, you wonder if they ever, if there's any honest people there that will let something be released, or it isn't already been shedded, shredded, like, I think the Secret Service early in the game just shredded all their documents. They just said, we don't want anybody to ever find out, what we knew ahead of time or what we failed to do, And I think from Vince Palamara has outlined, just how crooked the whole thing is, That's why we're, Trump might have not been my favorite or first pick or anything like that, but when they run other people so poor, so demented that you think it's got to be on purpose, that they're just running a little puppet show here, and vote for this guy, vote for that guy, doesn't matter. We're in charge, and we're going to keep things hidden no matter who you elect.
Yeah, that's the ultimate problem, and I do think that, like you said, you know, like Trump or not, you know, if you could in 2017 with someone who's impulsive as he is, when he announced he was going to, you know, release the files and they got him to back down then, I don't see it happening quite like that again. I don't know how he can make these politicians make pledges all the time, but this seems to be one of the first things he wants to take on. And all he has to do to start is rescind, you know, we can go step by step, rescind Biden's last order and say, look, we're going to take a fresh look at this. And I've gotten better legal counsel now on the JFK Act and how it's supposed to work. We're going to just start by looking at the work of the ARB back in the 90s, all the records they already did review, and determine when and how they should be declassified and follow those decisions. And they were already made. They were orders of the ARB. There's really, the agencies can't interfere with that anymore. They already had the opportunity to negotiate with the ARB in the 90s. So now, you know, he could issue an order like that. Let's just follow the law, release what the ARB said should have been released by 2017 or prior. And that would be a great start, you know?
Or prior. So it's kind of, I don't know, ironic, or the poverty, the whole thing, that we're relying on Donald Trump to set the record straight, right?
Yeah, that is. It definitely is ironic, but it is what it is. And he seems very interested in the issue. So does Bobby Kennedy Jr. And if it doesn't happen now, I'm not saying it'll never happen. But, you know, what are they waiting on? Living persons or current sources and methods? No, not from 1963, not anti-Castro operations. So there's got to be living persons or methods that deal with the 60-year cover-up and the lies. And that's really where you go to.
Yeah, I mean, you could make the case that with Sullivan Cromwell, a big law firm representing all of the most important corporations of America, and Alan Dulles is on that board of directors, with John Foster Dulles, who had already passed away. But, you know, those guys, State Department and the head of the CIA, and then they're representing the big money of America. And when the big money, when the boardroom, they said, look, this guy's got to go, get rid of him. And, for instance, Alan Dulles says, well, I'll come up with the plan. I'll send whoever, various people to take care of it. And, of course, one by one, these plots don't facilitate. They either call in somebody like Ed Lansdale or whoever to say, look, he's got to go. We got to do it. We don't care how crazy it looks. We're running out of time.
Yeah.
So we'll shoot him in broad daylight.
Yeah. I mean, right. You can talk about Dulles for sure. That's the fact that he was appointed to the Warren Commission and was its most active member is a problem. The other interesting thing in reading Dan Hardway, who is a investigator with the HSCA, worked with a guy named Ed Lopez, and they wrote the report on Mexico City and Oswald. But the single most biggest issue and obstacle he ran into investigating the Oswald CIA connections had to do with David Phillips. They interviewed him. He got extremely agitated when they went into that area, and also trying to get Bill Harvey's security files. Those are things that will not be released. And then, of course, the Joannides files. We know that it's almost a certainty that Joannides was Phillips' right-hand man in JM Wave in Miami, with their sole focus was the anti-Castro operations, infiltration of the Fair Play for Cuba committee, things like that. And of course, Oswald was in the middle of all of it.
And the fact that they called him out of retirement, and then after that, to handle Dan Hardway, he got a medal, he got an award.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, right then and there, it shows more than passive, proactive assistance in covering up their friends, which could be the big money of America, or the banking concerns, or even maybe further, drugs, that kind of money.
Yeah, right. Like I said, the institutional belief that protecting their friends and what they did 60 years ago is still worth protecting. Yeah, I mean, we know that not only was Joannides, quote, brought out of retirement, but he was actually working undercover in stonewalling Hardaway and Lopez and the HSCA into looking into all of these things. You know, lied to the those investigators about the fact
lied to Blakey, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
At least he somewhat apologized, because even when I interviewed him years ago, you know, I just said, we wished you had done more in that. He goes, no, they told us everything. We did everything we could. And then for him to find out later, they goes, you're kidding me. They lied to me. Joe Anides was, you know, it's, I don't know if it wasn't such an awful topic, the murder of the Kennedy. I mean, it would be, you know, kind of ironic and laughable. I said, yeah, of course the CIA lied to you, you know, but we've been studying this for years and, you know, we just recognize something's rotten.
Yeah, well, we, you know, it goes back to, you know, and Jeff Morley does a real good job talking about this. The CIA already had a 180 some odd page file or dossier on Oswald before Dallas. And when the Warren, those issues came up with the Warren Commission, there, the CIA's official line from, you know, Richard Helms and the like was, you know, we really don't know much about this guy. We've heard of him. Yeah, of course you've heard of him. He was on assignment in Russia and came back. And now we know all the activities he was involved in New Orleans and the whole debacle of Mexico City, whether he was there. And if he was, he was definitely impersonated there, too. I mean, LBJ and Hoover found that out very quickly that weekend about his voice and image was not him. So it's just, you know, those types of things, you know, are there. And that was, you know, the main point of the article is that they're there. If you just do a little research and go on YouTube and listen to these wonderful presentations by Hardaway and Morley and all these things that are known, then it's like, okay, what else is there left to hide? Because we know Oswald was no lone nut. I mean, Paul Blow does a really good job of that in Chokeholds, talking about over 60 known intelligence points that connect to Oswald before the assassination. I mean, it just goes on and on.
Yeah, but you can also, Fletcher Prouty always drove this home to me. He said the most important letter in CIA is the letter A. It's an agency. And like a law firm working for the client, who is this agency working for? And if you're going to say it works for the Department of Defense, that's one thing. But if you say, no, it's been infiltrated by Alan Dulles and that, and Sullivan Cromwell, then this agency is working for big money. And could it be for America? Or is it transnational? Is it, you know, is it bigger than that? And then you don't want to think about that, but then that is one area they might be covering up. Like, who ordered this? Who's covering it up? And, you know, even just the gunmen are, to me, more immaterial, because I love the quote from John Judge. Somebody was down at Dealey Plaza and saying, well, where did the shots come from? And he says, they came from Washington.
Yeah, it's just, you know, you can get into the case, and we do that in the book, you know, a great amount. You know, the overwhelming evidence of the frontal shot. You mentioned CE-399 and the ridiculousness of that. So, I mean, there's no doubt that there's a conspiracy in the case. And so now the focus is, you know, what the remaining records show about there's not going to be the way those things work. There's not going to be a piece of paper that explains exactly what happened in Dallas. But we know all about Oswald now, where he was at the right place at the right time, and that his background as a pro-Castro sympathizer was fake. And we know Kennedy was killed in a military-style ambush, and then the blame immediately went to Oswald. And the source of that information comes from a CIA-sponsored group that was operating with him in New Orleans and originated in Miami. So, I mean, that's what we know now.
And also, I think personally, the names that are going to come out if these files were ever released are not names that we've heard. I mean, we all have heard of, you know, Dulles, Lansdale, just all the other characters. It's going to go higher up the ladder that, this is who, the group of people that really got together. And this is who, you know, and they're not widely known.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and I'm just speculating a little bit here, but because of the extreme resistance that Dan Hardaway ran into when he was at the HSCA on David Phillips, on Bill Harvey, you got to wonder if Harvey and Phillips, you know, basically the JM wave leaders, the guys in charge there, were in tandem on the Dallas operation, you know.
Yeah, and from the Caribbean. Let me tell you just something. It's at this point just an anecdote, okay?
Yeah.
A friend of mine said, because I'm just in the music business, and he's a singer that was recording, and said, "Hey, an old friend of mine has written a book. He's 88 years old now, and he's written his life story. And he was a drug dealer between Montreal and Jamaica, Bahamas, and that, right? And he's got this book, his life story, and he, you know, he's like to get it out. Would you read it, right?" And so I read it, and he talked about one afternoon that when you move drugs in these big money, you know, higher than I ever think of, right? They had a meeting, and they brought up these various people that were meeting in Castle Bank and in the Bahamas, and you heard of the Nugent Hand Bank, maybe, and this ones that were handling Vietnam drug money, and the immense amount of money they were trying to get out of the Golden Triangle up there. And you think, well, maybe is that the Vietnam was a boat making a shore head there, so they could make sure they could move that kind of stuff out of there, right? So he was talking to him, and he said, "Well, Len was studying the JFK assassination." He goes, "Oh, well, I met a guy that was responsible for that." And he goes, "What?" "Yeah, his name's Paul Helliwell." And in this barbecues or things in down in the Caribbean there, he just said kind of matter-of-factly, and this fella who I hope to have on soon, January, February, just kind of said it and didn't know I knew anything about the case and that. And it was like, well, that's a funny name for someone just to bring out. Yeah, I know who was in charge of that. And I started looking into Paul Helliwell, and he's the CIA, Alan Dulles guy, that whole old boys network. And there is a lot of money, especially when you study the Nugent Hand Bank, and I start to study these, the amount of money they were pulling out of opium and heroin out of Vietnam and that. And for them, these kind of guys to be even higher than you think, maybe the mafia, were running big drug money organizations, banks, phony banks. That's a name that I have a feeling is going to come out more in some of these documents of people that they've been protecting. When you say sources and methods, and they just, Alan Dulles' name will pop up, and then we kind of go, well, of course, I figured that. I kind of knew that he was, you know, and the fact that he's on the Warren Commission making, it's kind of like the fact that Joanides is brought out of retirement. These guys are all covering themselves, but that is a name that I was not familiar with until now. And I remember Fletcher Prouty talking about this, the high cabal, the people that are so high up there that their anonymity is their greatest asset. And it could be that some of these people, and that's just one name that I kind of heard of, but it's really piqued my interest, and I'm starting to investigate now with every spare time I have to do this, because we've all got other lives, right? We're not working kind of for the government or for any kind of agency that is on a payroll to do critiques. But as interested citizens, we look into this case and we say, well, what really happened? How did they get away with it? And maybe we should study this to make sure it doesn't happen again. You know, that's the funny thing about Trump now, that he might have a lot of, or enough animosity to these agents. I mean, the fact that he was charged, he could be charged with whatever, I don't care, you know, and I'm, I can say I wasn't really a big fan before. He was, you know, a crooked real estate that went bankrupt so many times, and he bankrupted this hotel and that hotel, and somehow he just kept making more money. And he ran that dumb show, The Apprentice, and, you know, so I didn't have anything against him. I just didn't, you know. All the time I kept thinking about America, like when you run these people running for president, I would think that he would be like the dean of a university, like among professors someone's looked up to, and this is the best you have. And God, some of the people that are in there, like Lindsey Graham, I just can't believe he could run a Wendy's, you know? And yet money money, we want more war, we've got to give more billions to and in the meantime BlackRock and these other companies are all going to, they're going to bankrupt the Ukraine. They're going to take it all. It'll all become to them. It'll be like the Yugoslavia, which is broken up. And now no one small state has enough power to do anything. And confessions of an economic hitman. You can just see this tried and true tactic on and on and on. Oh, I'm kind of sub-referencing too much there, but
no,
I just wanted to mention to you that, I have been interested, gained an interest in Paul Helliwell and his background that I hadn't really. And then as you look, he goes, he's been there all along, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've done a good amount of reading on the whole evolution of the Wall Street banking and the Brown Brothers Harriman and the law firm, the Sullivan and Cromwell and the Dulles Brothers and all that. I mean, that was big money, and it seemed their chief purpose was to finance wars and build up that machine, the military and just industrial complex. And yeah, well, Dulles's name, is not going to be anonymous. I mean, maybe others that are, so far up that you'll never know who they are. But, he's the father of the CIA, and he was appointed to the Warren Commission. And then you see the strings being pulled up through the various investigations, the obstruction of justice in the Kennedy case, and so forth. And we're still seeing it. And it's like, there's this law that was designed to fix the problem more than 30 years ago, and they're treating it as a light suggestion. And somehow they've compelled the presidents, two in a row, Trump and Biden so far, to also ignore it and do what they want and what they're pressured to do. And that's really the scary problem.
Right, so we study it in at arm's length to understand how the world works, and then you go, "Geez, a lot darker than I really wanted it to be or imagined," you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's we have a wonderful country, I think, but once once people can be more aware of how it really works and the information that's out there in the mainstream media and how authentic that is, which is laughable to say, you can just kind of not relax, but you can just kind of feel, okay, well, we need our security, we need that needs to be paid for. Everyone's in favor of that. But it, then it gets out of control with these assassinations and terrorist attacks and all that. That one story gets out there and everyone gets behind it, a cause, and they have an immediate enemy to blame. That leads to, what we've seen.
Yeah, and I think what at Kennedy's and King you'll find is so many of these articles are, the mighty Wurlitzer was the term that the CIA could use, that we owned over 400 authors and assets and journalists, right, that will write whatever we want. And so now lately, with Tucker Carlson and Joe Rogan and Russell Brand, they're having people on that are going against. Like, no, these guys have been lying to you, and here we got a 3 hours to explain to you, not like a 5 minute clip, right? And you can see mainstream media doing a death rattle where they're fighting back and saying, "Don't believe these people, or we want to censor them." And I forget who said the quote, but censorship has never been on the side of the good guys. You know, if you're lying and you're fighting, holding the lie, and people who want to support the Warren Commission, and just keep parroting, "Oh, Lee Oswald did it after all." I mean, good luck. You can find so much more now on our freedom of speech here, which is like on Black Op Radio or Kennedy's and King or many other shows that people are detailing. We don't believe that at all. And here's what we found out. And even with Oliver Stone saying, "I made the movie in '92, 30 years later," right? Here's another step forward with what we know now. And even that's 3 or 4 hours, right? That's groundbreaking.
I think I try to make this point in the article, and I'm going to write another one that drills down on this more. It's like, if the explanation, even if it was a plausible explanation to get the attention off this from the agencies that somehow the president might endorse to find a solution here, is okay. Oswald was involved. He was an intelligence asset. We still think he did this on his own, may have had a little bit of help, but it's over 60 years ago. It happened. He went rogue with a couple other of his intelligence buddies in Dallas. And hey, we were sloppy with our monitoring of him. We knew all about him, but we had no idea he would do this in Dallas. And that people could live with that explanation if it was true. At least it shows that there's less of a lie. And that would not be, I don't think, so damaging to the agencies and to the government for that story to be told now. They say, okay, the Warren Commission at the time we thought was necessary to close the book on the case because of all the international, connections that could have erupted, and Oswald was and had enough CIA connections that we had to cover that up. I mean, there could be some truth to that, but I just don't think that's so damaging in 2024 if that was the story now. So that's why in the article I'm writing about, well, you know, we know he didn't do it, or at least do it alone. And, you know, we explained that very clearly in the Chokeholds book. But, you know, if they're still not sure who did, then the massive public reaction would be, well, who did it? Right. And that's the pressure they would face, a new reinvestigation, if they came out with that. So, and then it gets even worse when you talk about, well, we know he didn't do it. And there's also a CIA operation here that maybe was not sanctioned as an institution by the CIA, but enough of the elements of it pulled it off, and that they'll fight tooth and nail to cover up forever.
Yeah, so well, you know, I would almost make the discussion that maybe it was sanctioned. That mm-hmm. I remember asking Fletcher Prouty when he came back from the South Pole. I said, when you got back into the Pentagon there and you saw all these big offices opening up and the Vietnam War was now on and they had rooms that were empty and all that full of guys buzzing, they're planning the war. I said, well, these guys are smart guys. They must have known, you know, what happened. And his reply to me was, they all knew. Like, I remember I asked him, I said, well, how many people knew then? And he went, they all knew. You know, so therefore, in your conclusion, you say the agency will not give up the fight. Well, it's because if they reveal that, they said, you knew this for 60 years? And right. Every time we had asking Congress to have an investigation to open it up, you knew it the whole time. You knew it from day one. Oh, and you guys between Alan Dulles and Sullivan Cromwell, the big money banking concerns that are funding the Department of Defense, and you kind of see with BlackRock today that they're initiating a war, they're funding these senators to vote for war, and then they're investing in the war machine. So they're buying shares of Raytheon and Boeing and all that. And it's a I wanted to say circle jerk, but whatever. You know, it's just they're provoking the war. They're starting the thing with all these covert actions, and then making money hand over fist. And where does the $33 trillion go? Americans are printing money every day. They're printing $1 trillion every 100 days. They're printing it and giving it to BlackRock and these guys.
Yeah.
And you just imagine, well, how much longer can you be that bankrupt at $1 trillion every 100 days? And Americans are just going, well, we're just watching the football game or whatever. Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's going to end, and it's going to end like, you remember the old stories of Germany, you're taking a wheelbarrow full of money just to go buy a loaf of bread.
Yeah. No, I mean, like you said, it's remarkable the people that you probably have the same experience that you talk to these days, whether they're older than me or younger than me, that just either don't see it or don't want to see it. You know, they're content with, like you said, when the NFL Sundays this time of year and just kind of going about their business, which is fine. We all have to do that. But, you know, just kind of seeing how these things work and now in trying to understand it and you know, the proof of it, who knows what's left. But there's a reason why there's almost 4,000 records that we know of that are in the archives. And those are the records that were turned over to the ARRB and examined. And then there's, like you said, the Secret Service and other records that are probably not or in the protected collection in the archives that are still out there that, you know, guys like Jeff Morley were fighting so hard to get, that they're clearly assassination records. They're extremely relevant to Oswald's activities and connections to the CIA. You know, those are out there too.
Right. But another angle on this is something that Fletcher brought me up on early. You know, he said, listen, if you come to the conclusion quickly early in the game that Lee Oswald didn't do it, then the study of his whereabouts or his route or this, you know, he didn't do it. So right then and there, you know, okay, the trail's somewhere else. Now, some people have said they want to discover to the nth degree how innocent Lee is. So they said, we can prove he was here, he wasn't there, he was impersonated. So by that investigation, I don't belittle anyone for doing that. But at arm's length, if you go, okay, well, once you look at Commission Exhibit 399 and you know that bullet, you know, then the whole thing's a fraud. So you have to stand back and say, okay, well, who's got the, in the movie, who can cover it up? Who's got that kind of power? I think one thing is that it's institutionally, I guess, illegal not to have a trial in Texas. I mean, Lyndon Johnson is who said we're not having a murder trial in Texas for either Tippit or John F. Kennedy. We're going to have a blue ribbon commission, and that'll come from Washington. So
Yeah.
if anybody in the government, state of Texas wanted to put their foot down, just kind of like they did trying to keep the body in the hospital, they said, no, we're taking the body, we're going back. No, we're supposed to have an autopsy right here. That autopsy is Texas law, right? And I don't know if the guy pulled out a gun or he just pushed him or whatever, but there was a big hassle and they said, we're leaving, we're in charge.
Yes.
So that's
Yeah.
kind of the same thing, if you subscribe that Lee Oswald didn't have anything to do with it, and of course he's the patsy, of course he's set up, and you can follow the paper trail and the double identities and everything, then the real investigation will end up being who are they covering up for? And then, since they got away with that, how many other times have they got away with it? And then, you just have to kind of look at that latest Trump assassination attempt and you go, the guy got in there with a range finder. Did he bring his own ladder? Did he bring the gun? Did he carry it in over his, how did all that happen? And then the guy's killed on the roof like that. And then you go, well, I guess it's happening to this day.
Yeah. I mean, the cover up, it was immediately put in place and was clearly part of the operation to eliminate any, or at least to have the evidence controlled in Washington for sure, with the worst autopsy in the history of autopsies and the lack of a autopsy in Dallas. But I think to me the biggest, or one of the biggest reasons for that, and quickly appointing the Warren Commission, was once it became so quick with the disinformation that was out there by design about Oswald, that and knowing that's not who he really was, and all the intelligence connections he actually had, his assignments and activities, and all the impersonations, that they knew that there could not be a murder trial or a full investigation of his background, because it would lead right back to Pentagon, Washington, and JM Wave in Miami.
Yeah. And
So.
maybe the big banking concerns that are running Bell Helicopter, the
Yeah.
people that Alan Dulles is representing and meeting with boardrooms and, don't worry, I'll take care of this. And then even maybe more profitable and higher than that was worldwide drug trade.
Yeah.
But you mentioned, and it's good that you write that this is important and you're trying to keep it in the public eye. So I mean, congratulations for this
Thank
good
you.
article and keeping that, and like even when you with your conclusion, you're saying that the agencies will not give up the fight. Yeah, they can't, and that just underscores how they have been covering this up, for 60 years, and then people will say, well, what else have they been covering up then?
Yep, that's the big picture, and it starts with this case, and it's the best example of it because of the age of the case and how much is known 60 years later, that there's so much to evidence out there about the Warren Commission being fiction. And like I said, at the time, LBJ and those, there might have been some good faith reason for doing that, to close the book on the case because of all of the directions it could have gone, knowing that it wasn't really Castro or the Soviets that did it. So in it, that it was a domestic thing. And but now it's like, is it just institutional stubbornness and secrecy 60 years later? We're not showing you anything else. You already know enough, or are there more records that
Yeah,
further
but to
explain?
me, I almost the irony is that if you were to think, look, we can't investigate to the publicly Oswald because he was the Russia defector, and did they turn him and did they send him back? Are we at fault here? So Lyndon Johnson saying if this goes sideways, there could be a 30 a thermonuclear war, and how many million people would be killed? But yet, if you do have a Department of Defense, if you have a military, and you think your enemy just killed your president, what are you going to do? Sit in your hands and smile?
Yeah.
You know, so therefore it just kind of falls apart that of course Russia didn't do it, the Soviet Union. And if they did, what are you going to just, you know, bite your lip and say nothing? So,
Yeah.
you know, that angle just falls apart, but you hear it all the time. People say, "Oh, Lyndon Johnson must have been briefed. Look at, we're going to start a war. We can't do this. The best thing to do is just let it go away," you know? And then if he goes along with that, then they're all smiling and go, "We got away with it."
Yeah, I mean they put, because of these intelligence operations involving Oswald and the like, they put LBJ, once he had his discussions with Hoover and Richard Helms and the like immediately after Dallas, they put him in a position where he had to cover it up. I mean, let's face it. Now he used the story about, well, we're going to start World War III if we fully investigate this. Maybe he believed that to an extent. I mean, he was maniacal, right? But really, there was no other option because it just would have been a mess. A massive cover-up was needed to put it to bed, and they went to great lengths with the Warren Commission and then the CIA, giving them only certain information, very little, and they only relied on the FBI's file, which was all set up to make Oswald look like the guy. And that's how that came to be. I mean, I do believe there are members of the Warren Commission, the staffers that wanted to go other directions. They knew that, of course, several of the commissioners themselves dissented on the opinion. And we cover that in Chokehold's Purlieu. All the insiders that were on the Warren Commission, even Hoover himself, LBJ himself, none of them believed it. But that's where they had to go.
You're thinking of your career in a chain of command, and if your boss tells you just like you like the autopsy, just stop that. Don't investigate that. The family doesn't want to cover. Just that's good enough, you know.
Yeah,
So there you go, right?
don't probe the neck wound. Don't. It's just right. It's just like I said. There's so much out there that at least you can read an article like this. Read some of the really good books on the subject and educate yourself enough to know that there's a massive problem here. And then, but how do you explain 60 years later the continued secrecy on thousands of records? It's just. It's fascinating, and we're going to see what happens in I think very soon.
And you also mentioned that you thought Oswald shouldn't have lived. He should have been maybe shot coming out of the back of the theater or whatever. The other possibility is that he was meant to be taken to Redbird Field and then
Yeah.
flown to Cuba. And then that would have been the ultimate, oh, Castro's boy goes home. We've just followed him. And then they attack Cuba. And that they got both hands. They got rid of Kennedy and they're getting rid of Cuba.
Yep.
And then, discussion, just food for thought.
No, I mean all those things, there's enough there to logically conclude that that was part of the design to eliminate Kennedy and immediately blame Castro. But once Oswald survived that day, went into custody, and they knew if an investigation of his background would be a massive problem. Jack Ruby made it even more difficult by killing him 2 days later, and his background connected to of course, the Mafia, CIA, anti-Castro operations. So you have that, and it just was such a mess. They had to go the lone nut route. They had to, I mean, if there was an international conspiracy, they would have been looking for gunshots from all kinds of angles if they were all tied to Castro, but they just couldn't go there.
All right, well, the article is about the protected JFK files at Kennedy's and King. I'll make a link to that, and we'll make links to things that we brought up. Before I wrap up, is there anything you wanted to bring up or on this I didn't get to, or even anything else?
No, I mean, it was a great discussion. I mentioned our book Chokeholds a couple times. It's the researchers and attorneys that have collaborated on that have really put the case together in a way that we think it's for reader to easily come to the conclusions that a lot of which we've talked about here today. It talks about the case itself, the Dealey Plaza, the shooting, the autopsy, the magic bullet, and then the bigger problem of obstruction of justice, which is kind of my area. And the records and the ongoing fight against the secrecy. So that book's out there, really good. And I'd love to come back on again, especially as this issue develops, Len.
Okay, very good. Thank you for your good work. And just give me an email when something's up that you think my attention would be drawn to. I'll be glad to have you on.
Yeah, we'll do it. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Good Happy night. New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
All right, bye now.
Good night.